Welcome back to Four Winds Fellowships. I'm Pastor Tim Warner. We are in our Bereans Bible Institute, module number 2. In this module, we are dealing with the doctrine of God and His Son. We are in section D now of this module, which will be our last, probably our last. I may do one more, but our last section. In any case, in this section, I'm dealing with some of the fallacious arguments that are used by biblical Unitarians who deny the preexistence of Christ, that he was in the beginning with God, that through him all things were made. They claim that Jesus had no preexistence as a conscious being until his conception or birth from Mary. So essentially, they claim that Jesus is purely human, just another man. He had a miraculous birth, yes, but so did others have miraculous births, including Isaac and so forth. So Jesus is just a man, and he is only declared to be the Son of God, that is a title that's bestowed upon him, but he's not literally the Son of God. Now, we saw in the last lesson, which is the first in this section D, that the appeal is made to Matthew chapter 1, where the gospel begins by talking about the genesis of Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham. We showed that that passage is being misused by biblical Unitarians. And then we also looked at Luke 1:35, which is also misused by biblical Unitarians, in order to claim that the creation of this infant in Mary's womb, this human infant in Mary's womb, is in fact the reason why Jesus is called the Son of God, but he is clearly not literally the Son of God, according to them, because God did not literally father him or literally beget him. They believe that God created him, which is a totally different concept. He did not come forth out of God himself, as the term begot or begotten implies, but rather that he's just another creature of God. So those are their claims. We showed why those two claims are false from the very texts that they're drawing them from. Now, one of the claims that I want to deal with today is that given those two claims, then biblical Unitarians go on to say that the gospel accounts, the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, give no indication whatsoever of any preexistence of Christ, even beyond the birth narratives. And that is, in fact, a false claim. And I'm going to show you probably the most, in my opinion, the most powerful claim to preexistence in the Synoptic Gospel. And it's in all three. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. The same account is given. And it is from Jesus' own mouth. And he was discussing something with the Jewish scholars who should have been able to answer his question, his riddle, if in fact Jesus was only human, but they were unable to answer it. So we're going to look at that riddle, that question that he gave. And as we look at that, we'll see that the solution to the riddle that Jesus gave about himself is found in the Old Testament. It's found in Isaiah, but it's also clearly explained in the book of Revelation. All right. So let's, without any further delay, let's get into this passage. It's in Matthew chapter 22, beginning in verse 41. And this is what it says. While the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them, saying, "What do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he?" Now, this is the critical question. Whose son is Christ? They said to him, "The son of David." He said to them, "How then does David in the Spirit call him Lord?" And the word Lord here is not necessarily a divine title. It simply means master, that is one's superior. So How then does David in the Spirit call him Lord or Master, saying, quote, and here he begins to quote from Psalm 110, verse 1. The Lord, that is Yahweh, said to my Lord, that is my Master, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. That's the end of the quote from Psalm 110, verse 1. So then Jesus says, if David then calls him Lord, how is he his son? And no one was able to answer him a word, nor from that day did anyone dare question him anymore. This is a significant statement because it shows that the scholars, the Pharisees who were the scholars, could not solve the question that Jesus presented to them. All right. Again, whose son is he? Now, this is a critical question, and it's because the biblical Unitarians claim that the words or the title Son of God is really saying nothing more than Son of David. Son of David obviously means that Jesus was a physical human descendant of King David, right? But biblical Unitarians claim that the title Son of God is just a title bestowed upon the kings of the Davidic dynasty. All right, so those descendants of David who were kings are referred to as a son of God, simply as a bestowed title. This is their claim. Now, Jesus is actually challenging that mindset because the Pharisees, the scribes, the scholars of the Jews of those days had a mentality that was pretty consistent with what biblical Unitarians hold today. That is that Jesus is just the son of David, and he's only the son of God as a bestowed title. All right, that's a critical point. So Jesus is actually challenging that presupposition with what he says here. So he says, whose son is he? Well, everybody knows that he is the descendant of David because all the prophecies about the coming of the Messiah, the coming of the Christ, all point back to the Davidic covenant when the prophet Nathan, came to David and prophesied to David that God was going to give him a son who would sit upon his throne, sit upon David's throne, reign over David's kingdom, and that his kingdom would never end. All right, that was the covenant that God made with David through Nathan the prophet. So here's the question again. Look at the question. It's a critical question. If David calls the Messiah his Lord or his Master, how can he be his son? That's the question that Jesus is presenting. In other words, if Jesus is only literally the son of David, and not something more than that, then why or how can David refer to him as his Lord or his superior? Now, this is, again, as I said, he's quoting from Psalm 110, verse 1. And before I move on, I want to point out that this Psalm 110, verse 1, is the Old Testament scripture that is most often cited in the New Testament. I counted 20 times that Psalm 110, verse 1 is either mentioned, either quoted, or is referred to in the New Testament, and it is one of the cornerstone doctrines of the Christian faith of who Christ is. Psalm 110, verse 1. It has to do with him being seated at the right hand of God. It has to do with his ascension and being seated at the right hand of God where he is right now. All right, now, the reason this is an issue, this was an issue for these Jewish scholars, is because in biblical thinking, and we could say Jewish thinking, but it's really biblical ways of thinking, ways that you see patterns throughout the entire Old Testament and even in the New Testament, these patterns of thought, is that in a genealogical succession, and that's what we're talking about here, because he's asking whose son is he, right? So he's talking about a genealogical succession, the Christ, the Messiah, the one who's going to reign on the throne of David. He's asking about his genealogical succession and whose son he is, right? So that's a critical part. So in that way of thinking, in thinking about genealogical succession, in thinking about family trees, in that way of thinking, from a biblical perspective, the ancestor always outranks his descendant. Okay, so like David was the king, he was the first king of the what's called the Davidic dynasty, right? Then his son Solomon became king. But David is always considered superior to his son Solomon, even though Solomon became king and Solomon sat upon the throne of David and Solomon reigned in the Davidic dynasty. It's called the Davidic dynasty because David is the first primary king of that dynasty. And Solomon came from David's loins, and David appointed his son Solomon to be king after he was when he was on his deathbed. And so we see this happening all down through all the descendants of Solomon, all the kings of Judah that we see in Kings and Chronicles. These are David's succession of descendants, but David is always superior to all of his succession of descendants. All right? The ancestor is always superior to his offspring, and that goes doubly for a kingly or a royal dynasty. The founder of the dynasty is always superior to those who come after him and sit on his throne and rule in his kingdom. We see this not only in royal, royal genealogies, but just in genealogies in general. You know, when in John 8, 53 through 58, the question came up of who was greater. That, you know, they asked Jesus, "Are you greater than our father Abraham? Who do you think you are?" Right? Are you making yourself somebody greater than Abraham? Well, what was Jesus' answer to that? Was it that, well, God made me greater than Abraham, or God appointed me greater than Abraham? No. His answer to that was, before Abraham originated, I exist. In other words, chronologically, I'm before Abraham, and that makes me outrank Abraham. All right, you see how that works? So if Christ, the Messiah, and the word Christ there simply is Christos in Greek, it's Mashiach in Hebrew, and David is called Messiah or Christ. Solomon was as well. So we see that this is a title in reference to this royal king of the nation of Israel. So if the Christ, the ultimate Christ, the one who is going to fulfill the promises that God made to David about one of his seed sitting on his throne and reigning over Israel forever, if he is merely David's descendant, which is what the scholars assumed to be true, and it is what biblical Unitarians also assume to be true, because they think Christ is merely a human descendant of David, nothing more. All right? If that's the case, then David would have to be superior to the Messiah or the descendant that's going to come much later and sit on his throne, sit on David's throne and reign over David's kingdom. All right, that's the setting for this. And this is why they could not answer him. Look what it says here. If David then calls him Lord or Master, how is he his son? He's inferior to him in that biblical way of thinking. And no one was able to answer him a word, nor from that day did anyone dare question him anymore. This question completely shut down the scholars, the Jewish scholars who had the exact same mentality about the Messiah that biblical Unitarians have. All right, he shut them down. They couldn't question him anymore. And biblical Unitarians cannot answer this either, not in a way that approaches it from the context and from this biblical worldview, this biblical mindset. All right, so let's scroll down here. So David calling the Messiah his Lord or his superior in Psalm 110:1 implies that Christ that is David's descendant, was his superior. David's calling him his superior. David says, the Lord, Yahweh, said to my superior. If that's his son, then David himself is implying that Christ is his superior. And in a genealogical tree, the ancestor is the cause of that person's existence because, you know, in the biblical way of thinking, a son comes forth from his father, and then his son comes forth from that son, and so forth, all the way down the line. So David gave existence to the entire dynasty of kings, succession of kings that came from his own loins, from the book of Samuel all the way down through the book of 2 Chronicles. David is the source of all those things. Therefore, he is the superior of all those. So what is the correct answer? And why couldn't the scribes, the Pharisees, solve the riddle? Well, they couldn't solve the riddle because they did not understand the Son's pre-human existence and the fact that he himself was the source of the covenant God made with David, bringing him to the place to become king after Saul, and then giving him the promise of one of his descendants, who he then became that descendant. Now, how am I going to show that from the scripture? Well, it's because this concept was already prophesied in the book of Isaiah, but the scribes and the Pharisees did not understand it, right? It's one of those mysteries that was hidden. You know, Paul talks about the mystery of Christ, the hidden wisdom, which none of the rulers of this age knew, for had they known, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. They didn't know that the one they crucified, who they thought was just a man, was actually the Son of God who came down from heaven to become human. They didn't understand any of that, and they crucified him. All right, so this is what Isaiah 11 has to say about this descendant of David. Isaiah 11, I'm going to read verses 1 and then verse 4, so you can see the reason I put verse 4 in there is because it's clearly talking about him reigning in his kingdom when he returns, and I wanted you to see that. But I want you to see the terminology that's used about this descendant of David, this son of David, right? So it says, now let me just set a little context here. The book of Isaiah in several different places prophesies the destruction and the judgment of the nation of Israel, of the northern kingdom, and also the judgment of the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah, where the Davidic kings actually reigned. And of course, ultimately, it prophesies the coming of Nebuchadnezzar to destroy Jerusalem, to take away the Davidic kings. And Jeremiah goes on to say that, prophesy that the whole lineage coming from that series of Davidic kings is going to be cut off. And that last king, who then is taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar, that none of his descendants are going to sit upon the throne of David and reign over the house of Israel. So it sounds like the promise of the Davidic dynasty going on forever is somehow God's bringing it to an end. How is that even possible? right? So this is, we see these prophecies in Isaiah and in Jeremiah and in a few other places. So so this is what Isaiah says when he also prophesies the coming or the return of the Davidic dynasty. And he portrays the cutting down of the Davidic dynasty as the stump of Jesse. And it's a stump because this tree, this genealogical tree of descendants coming from Jesse. Remember, Jesse is David's father, right? So Jesse's youngest son, instead of his oldest son, his youngest son, David, was appointed by God to be king of Israel. He was anointed to be king of Israel after Saul. So when it talks about the stump of Jesse, it's talking about the fact that this Davidic line is cut down, like a tree is cut down and there's nothing left but a stump in the ground. All right, so he's talking about the kingdom, he's talking about Messiah reigning, and this is how Isaiah portrays it. Then a shoot will grow from the stump of Jesse, and a branch from his roots will bear fruit. But he will judge the poor righteously, and this is the branch, this is the Messiah, and execute justice for the oppressed of the land. He will strike the land with a discipline from his mouth. He will kill the wicked with a command from his lips. And then skipping down, it goes on to talk about the lion the lamb lying down with a wolf and all that stuff, right? Talking about in the kingdom, this is a famous prophecy about the kingdom. And then he goes on, he says in verse 10, on that day, now notice, I want you to notice this, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will seek him, that is the root of Jesse, David's father, and his resting place will be glorious. And this is, again, this is, no one disputes that this prophecy, all of Isaiah 11, is a prophecy about the kingdom, right? The coming kingdom. It's about the revival of the Davidic dynasty after it has been cut off. It's cut down like a tree that's cut down and nothing is left but the stump. And he calls it the stump of Jesse. Jesse, again, is David's father. Right? But what happens to this stump? A little twig grows up out of the stump. Now, this is pretty... pretty fascinating to me personally, because I've got behind my house here, I have some sweet gum trees that were threatening my house, you know, the branches falling and whatnot. So a few years ago, I had them cut down, a whole row of them, had them cut down. And they ground the stumps with a stump grinder, but because there were some rocks and stuff all down in there, it was dulling his stump grinder, and he couldn't really get down really deep to grinding down the stump. So a little bit of the stump was sticking up, just a little tiny bit, but it was actually low enough that I could mow over it with my tractor. And I did mow over it for a while, and then, you know, I kind of let it go a little bit. And after a while, a whole bunch of new twigs, little twigs, started growing up out of that stump. And it kind of got out of hand a little bit, and it was getting a little too big for me to mow over with the mower, so I just started going around it. Well, eventually it grew up into this huge thing that was probably at least 12 to 15 feet tall. And just recently I said, okay, that's enough of that, and I got my chainsaw out, and I went out there and cut it all back down again. And I cut it all down just about flush with the ground. And it's already, little twigs are already coming back up out of that old root. Most of the big root looks dead, but parts of it are still alive. And these twigs are coming up out of that root of that sweet gum tree. It's pretty fascinating to see. Well, this is what is being described by Isaiah the prophet regarding after the Davidic dynasty, the series of kings from David, is completely annihilated, completely cut off. That somehow, and God saying from the last king, none of his descendants are ever going to sit on the throne of David. Right? That was Coniah. Well, after the Babylonian captivity for 70 years, they had no more kings. Israel had no more kings. They had some priests who kind of acted like kings, but David's descendants, none of them were ever kings in Israel again. Israel has never had a king since the cutting off, since the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. Oh, that's pretty impressive. But Jesus is prophesied, prophesied to be that king. When the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary, said that she was going to bring forth a son, he says the Lord God is going to give him the throne of his father David, and he's going to reign over the house of Israel. This is quoting from Isaiah 9, verse 7. So this prophecy in Isaiah 11 is about the restoration of the Davidic dynasty. Excuse me just one second. The critical point that you have to see in this passage is that the same one who is a shoot or a branch that grows up out of the stump of Jesse. It's a shoot that grows from the stump of Jesse, David's father. It is a branch that grows up out of Jesse's roots and bears fruit. That this is the Messiah who's going to judge in the kingdom. And in the kingdom, it says on that day, not the branch of Jesse, not the shoot of Jesse, but the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples, and the nations will seek him. And this is Christ. So the question now is, how can Jesus, the son of David, who is the Messiah, the son of David, how can he be the shoot, the branch that grows up out of the stump of David? The scribes and Pharisees understood this part, right? He's going to be a descendant of David. Whose son is he? What do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he, Jesus says. The son of David, they say. Okay, he's the branch that grows out of the root. They understood that. This is the part they didn't understand right here. Because the same one who is the branch that grows from his root is also the root of Jesse, which means, excuse me, he preceded Jesse, he preceded David, and he is the cause of David and his kingdom. He is the very cause of it. All right, he gave existence to it. That's the part that they missed. Now, the branch of David is also found in Jeremiah 23:5, Jeremiah 33:15. In these two passages, the book of Jeremiah sort of zeroes in on something that Isaiah prophesied about earlier. But Jeremiah prophesied for the 40 years leading up to the Babylonian exile and the cutting off of the Davidic dynasty. But then Jeremiah picks up the same theme that we found in Isaiah, and he talks about the branch of David promised to come back again, just like we see here in Isaiah. And then in Zechariah 3:8 and Zechariah 6:12, we're getting closer to the time of Christ. But it refers to him again as that righteous branch of the Davidic covenant that's going to reign, okay, in the kingdom. All right, so now here's the thing. If I had put these things together myself, if I just said, okay, well, look, Jesus used this little, he quoted from Psalm 110, you know, if Jesus is the Christ is David's son, how can David call him his master? It's a question. If that's all we had, and then we went over here and we looked at Isaiah and we saw that, oh, well, here's the solution in Isaiah, that, you know, the same one who is this, the branch that grows from David's, this descendant of David, is the same one who is the root as well of this tree, the Davidic dynasty. If we could put that together, you know, people, it's convincing, but people will find their ways of explaining it away, right? Those who don't want to believe will find their ways of explaining it away, which is what biblical Unitarians are masters at doing. But we have this passage in Revelation chapter 22, and it's interesting that this comes from John, right? John, who wrote the Gospel of John, who wrote all that pre-existence language in the Gospel of John. He includes a statement. Again, it's by Jesus' own mouth, right? In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the riddle that was presented came from Jesus' own mouth. John now, in Revelation, the very end of the Bible, in no uncertain terms, ties all these things together. And it's done from the words of Jesus himself speaking in the first person, I am. So what does it say? Revelation 22:16, Jesus says, I, Jesus, have sent my angel to attest these things to you for the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, the bright and morning star. I am both the root and the offspring. Now, this is impossible in a genealogical, in a normal genealogical tree. You'd have to precede yourself, right? You would have to precede yourself to be both the root and the offspring of David. But clearly we're talking about a genealogical tree. That's what Isaiah is talking about in Isaiah 11. That's what Jesus was referring to in his riddle, because he's saying whose son is the Messiah. He's talking about genealogy. And now he's talking about a genealogical tree. It's not just the root and the branch, but he clearly uses the word offspring here, which is what a branch in a genealogical tree represents. It represents offspring, that which comes after and is produced by the parent or the ancestor, right? Jesus says, I am both the root, the source, and the offspring of David. Jesus is the source of David. Jesus is the offspring of David. This is how David can call him his master in Psalm 110, verse 1. The Lord said to my Lord. Right? Now, Isaiah 11, 1 and 10, Matthew 22, 41 through 46, which was Jesus' riddle, and Revelation 22, 16, which we have right here, all deal with the structure of a genealogical tree. Jesus predates Jesse, David's father, and David. And the fact that Jesus predates Jesse and David is the very reason that David called Jesus his Lord, his superior, because he predates him and he knew that the Son of God is the one who brought about his own kingdom, his own dynasty, and who then brought him this prophecy about one of his sons who would be the very one who brought about his dynasty. All right, and the virgin birth explains, and Christ's preexistence explains how all this can actually work. Now, in the time we have left, I just want to deal with the biblical Unitarian explanations. They have two explanations that I have heard from biblical Unitarians. I've actually questioned some in face-to-face, some those who were considered experts in the biblical Unitarian camp. I've actually questioned and talked to them about this, and I've gotten two different explanations for how Jesus can be both the root and the offspring of David. Okay, so here's the first claim. Well, Jesus and Jesus' riddle. How can David call his descendant his Lord or his master? Well, one person, I won't name, said that Jesus is only David's superior because God exalted him above his ancestor David. Right now we have Philippians 2. You probably are all familiar with that. We're going to probably deal with that passage in an upcoming video. But in Philippians 2, it talks about Christ being in the form of God. Did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant and becoming in the likeness of men. And then having been found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, became obedient unto death, even death of the cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and given him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee shall bow. So there's no question that God has highly exalted David's descendant, the Christ, the Messiah, and given him the name above every name. But if that was the reason, if that was the explanation to Jesus' riddle, then why couldn't the scribes, the scholars, answer that? Didn't they know that the Messiah, when he came and he was going to reign over the house of Israel forever, didn't they know from all the Old Testament prophecies that that's an exalted position? Yes, they did. Of course they knew that. Yet they couldn't answer Jesus' riddle because, again, going back to what we talked about at the beginning, a descendant, if he's only a human descendant, cannot outrank his father, period. Especially in a royal dynasty, right? They knew that. They knew that the prophecy of Isaiah said that Messiah was going to sit upon the throne of David and rule over David's kingdom. Look it up. It's in Isaiah 9, verse 7. He said the same thing. Gabriel said the same thing to Mary. He quotes from this passage that the Lord God is going to give him, that is the child born, the throne of his father David. What does that imply? Does that imply that when Yahweh gives Jesus the throne of his father David in the kingdom, that Jesus is superior to David? No, because it's the throne of David. Doesn't imply that. See, his superiority doesn't come from the fact that he gets to sit on David's throne. It's still David's throne. And Isaiah says he's going to rule over David's kingdom. And of that kingdom, there's not going to be any end. He's going to rule over David's kingdom. Again, it's still David's kingdom. His descendants are ruling over it. So again, the fact that God exalts him to the place of fulfilling the promises to David does not and did not, in the minds of these Jewish scholars, did not answer the question of how David can refer to his descendant as his master. It did not solve it. All right, so if it didn't solve it for them, biblical Unitarians aren't going to get off the hook that easy. All right, they're basically holding the same view as these religious scholars did. But not only that, Jesus' question had to do with ancestral rank. All right, this is really the critical part, because his question started out by saying, what do you think about the Christ or the Messiah? Whose son is he? So the whole context of Jesus' question deals with ancestral rank and deals with the Davidic dynasty as a kingdom and the succession of kings in the Davidic dynasty. That was the context of the question. And so the answer to the question has to be within that setting, within that context of a royal dynasty, the founder of the dynasty, and then a successor farther down the road, right? It has to be in that context. Biblical Unitarians are ignoring that context when they make this claim that, well, it's only because God exalted him above his father. Well, no. Did God exalt Christ? Yes, after that. But Christ's exaltation was not just to be the human Messiah. Christ's exaltation, he's sitting at God's right hand. All right? So there's something more to the Messiah than merely being the son of David. And that is because he is also the son of God. What this shows is that being the son of God is an entirely different thing than being the son of David, at least being the begotten son of God. This is how the Gospel of John presents Jesus as the only begotten of the Father. No Davidic king was ever begotten by God. Literally begotten by God. No Davidic king ever came down from heaven. All right, and now here's the last one that I want to. this is the way that one other biblical Unitarian so-called scholar tried to explain away this problem. So he says, well, Jesus is the root and the branch, both the root and the branch, because if you look at a tree doesn't grow all of its roots first and then grow branches. That roots grow out at about the same time and same rate that branches grow out. So it's not like the root precedes the branches in time. It's actually simultaneous, right? So Jesus can be both the root and the branch at the same time. That's, you know, as a human, that's the explanation that I was given. And I've even seen videos of this same person doing this, and he's got a picture of a tree and then underground with all the roots sticking out, and that's supposed to explain this away. But the context of Isaiah 11 and Revelation 22:16 is not about the science of dendrology, which is the study of trees or horticulture. It's not about how trees grow. It's about a genealogical tree. And we think of a genealogical tree in certain terms. And it's a tree is being used to portray a family generationally, right? The cause and then the branches, which are the descendants, right? So a genealogical tree is looked at differently than an actual tree, how an actual tree grows, right? So if you look at it in the way a genealogical tree is looked at, and there are genealogical trees in the Bible, in Romans chapter 11, verses 16 through 24, it talks about the olive tree, it talks about the root of the tree, and it talks about the branches of the tree, and so forth. And it's all about, actually, that's also about Christ being the root there. Excuse me. Just 1 second. In that passage. So, but the part that they're missing here, the part that biblical Unitarians are missing when they offer that explanation, is that Isaiah's prophecy about the branch growing out of the stump is a prophecy about the cutting down of the Davidic dynasty. And it's about a stump with its roots that are still in the ground. And out of that stump, a little twig coming up, growing up out of that stump, out of those roots, right? So it's not that in Isaiah's prophecy, it's not that a new tree, a new seed fell into the ground, and a little sprout popped up. And as the little sprout is growing, little roots are growing. That's not the analogy that's being given in Isaiah chapter 11. In Isaiah 11, excuse me, it's a mature tree, a full-grown tree, the Davidic dynasty, that is cut down to the ground. And then sometime later, out of that stump, a little twig starts to grow up. And that twig becomes the Messiah, the human Messiah, Jesus. All right, so again, that analogy that you know, the root and the branches grow together at the same time is not applicable to this prophecy in Isaiah about Jesus being both the root and the branch at the same time. It's not applicable to that, right? So it's clever. It's a clever attempt to do away with what is said there in Revelation about Jesus being both in Isaiah 11, but it won't pass muster. It's completely bogus. All right, so finally, I just want to make a couple of final statements here and we'll be done. We started by saying that biblical Unitarians claim that Matthew, Mark, and Luke have absolutely nothing about preexistence in them, and therefore they reject preexistence because of what they claim is silence about preexistence, right? But all three of those gospels have this story of Jesus presenting this riddle drawn out of Isaiah chapter 11 and also finally interpreted by Jesus himself in Revelation. All right. All three of those gospels have this in it. Biblical Unitarians attempt to explain away the Jesus being both the root and the branch of David. They do it using these bogus analogy, like I showed you, of a tree, you know, a little tree growing and branches and roots growing at the same time. Again, it won't work. It's just their way of trying to explain away what the text is saying. And then they try to explain away many statements in John's gospel, you know, about Jesus coming down from heaven, about him existing before Abraham, about him being in the beginning with God, all things created through him, about him being the only begotten of the Father. All those statements, and there's many of them in John's gospel, they also try to explain those away. So they've explained away Jesus out of the synoptic gospels, partly from what they claim is silence, but it's not silence. And then when he does give the information, they explain that away with these bogus illustrations. They explain away the text of John's gospel, and they also then turn around and demonize the earliest Christian writers who, for the most part, were martyrs for their faith. They were disciples of the apostles who taught clearly and unquestionably and across the board that the Son of God preexisted, that he was in the beginning with God, that all things were made through him, and they turn those earliest Christian martyrs into heretics, corrupted supposedly by Greek philosophy. All of these things that they do, that biblical Unitarians do to try to explain these things away, to make Jesus nothing more than a mere man with no history prior to his birth, are summed up by Paul in Ephesians chapter 4 in this statement. He calls this, or characterizes, the trickery of men in cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. That's really a powerful statement, but this is precisely what biblical Unitarians do, and they do it constantly, especially in the New Testament. Now, I'm going to wrap up. This is going to be the last lesson where we're talking about the arguments used in the Gospels. We're going to move into the Epistles, Acts and the Epistles, in the next upcoming lessons. But there is more evidence in the Gospels, in Mark especially. If you look at the quotations, there's two quotations when it's talking about John the Baptist and the writer of Matthew and Mark. But especially Mark, look at Mark's, the beginning of Mark. And they'll say that John the Baptist coming is a fulfillment of two prophecies. And they quote from Isaiah 40 and also Malachi 3:1. And if you look at those two prophecies of who this person, who's John the Baptist clearly in those statements, who does this forerunner come to announce? Who does he come to announce? And you will see that Jesus is given titles Jesus is referred to as Yahweh. He's referred to as the Lord whom you seek. And he's referred to as the angel of the Lord in Malachi chapter 3. Of course, all that stuff has to be swept under the rug. But these are just little bits of evidence that testify to the preexistence of Christ. Was all of this stuff clearly understood at the beginning of Jesus' ministry? Was it all understood even by the apostles completely when Jesus sent them out to preach? No. If you read 1 Corinthians chapters 1 and 2, but especially chapter 2, Paul talks about how that Christ was a mystery that was concealed since the very beginning, and that this mystery is only revealed through the apostles by the Spirit, and it's being done progressively after Pentecost. And so what we see is, as we work our way through the New Testament, in the later books we see that were written later, we see much more information and clear statements about Christ's preexistence, especially in Paul, and then of course in John. We have that as well. All right, so there is plenty of evidence for Christ's preexistence. And again, I just wanted to point out what I would call the trickery of men and cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting that takes place in the attempts to deny what the scriptures teach about who Jesus really is. All right. Hope you got something valuable out of that, and we'll see you again next time. God bless.